This podcast of The Exchange is sponsored by Dartmouth Hitchcock, creating a new model for healthcare where leading health systems collaborate to improve care for all of us. A sustainable system improving the health of our communities for years to come. Information at imagine.d-h.org.
And the Dagoba Group, a global diversity and inclusion consulting practice with specialties in unconscious bias, leadership dynamics, and client engagement. Authors of the book, The Inclusion Dividend. More at thedagobagroup.com.
And Northeast Credit Union, helping their members save money through free checking accounts and refinancing of auto, home, and personal loans. Northeast Credit Union, encouraging you to discover the difference at necu.org. Federally insured by NCUA, equal housing opportunity.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. This fall, the Food and Drug Administration may crack down on vaping, an alternative to smoking that's grown wildly popular in recent years. For the uninitiated, vaping is done with an electronic cigarette, a cartridge that looks like a fat pen, which holds a liquid containing nicotine and other additives. A small internal battery heats the liquid, and then users inhale the vapor. Unlike regular cigarettes and other tobacco products, e-cigarettes contain no tar and are therefore marketed as a safer alternative to smoking. Also, unlike cigarettes, they're unregulated. But this spring, the FDA said that should change. The agency released proposed rules that would expand its tobacco oversight to these products. Smaller participants in the vaping industry worried they'd be put out of business, while public health groups said the proposed rules were far too long in coming. Today in The Exchange, we try to clear up some of the smoke around vaping and public health. Let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. We have three guests with us. Dr. Michael Siegel joins us from Boston. He's a professor of community health sciences at Boston University School of Public Health. Dr. Siegel, welcome back. Good to have you.
Thanks. Good to be back with you.
Joining us in studio, Dr. Suzanne Tansky, associate professor of pediatrics at Dartmouth's Geisel School of Medicine. She focuses on tobacco prevention and cessation and adolescent risk behaviors. And Dr. Tansky, nice to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
And joining us from D.C., Rob Stein, correspondent and senior editor on NPR's Science Desk. He's been writing a lot about the vaping trend. And Rob, great to have you. Thank you also for your time.
Oh, hi, Laura. Nice to be here.
Well, Rob, I want to start with you. Just for those who don't know what vaping is, how it works, give us your best short description, please.
Yeah, well, I think you did a really good job just now describing it. Basically, vaping involves the...
And it seems like we lost Rob. Go ahead, Rob Stein. Can you hear me? Okay, all of a sudden, Rob's line from NPR has dropped out. What a shame, and I'm sure he'll be back with us very soon. How about you, Dr. Tansky? Your best short description of how vaping works, if I'd never seen it, never heard of it.
I would totally agree. You did a great job with that short description. These are very variable. So I can compare an electronic cigarette. If someone says I smoke an electronic cigarette, that's kind of like the same thing as saying I drive a car. It can be anything from a hybrid to an electric car to a gas-guzzling SUV, and there's a lot of variety in there. So some of them are just disposables. They look like cigarettes. We call them cigalikes. They're things that you plug in, you can recharge. And there's others that have a tank where you can fill it up with electronic juice that has nicotine in it, and other things that people can modify and really change a lot with their how much electricity they have, how much heat they have, and what how much vape you get as a user. So there's a tremendous amount of variability. There's different levels of nicotine in all these products. So your mileage may vary, and it's a little bit tough to say what exactly is at what everyone uses when they say they use an electronic cigarette.
Yeah, what do you think about that, Dr. Siegel? It's hard to sit there and say electronic cigarettes are this when mileage may vary, as Dr. Tansky says. Do you agree?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's a great point, that there is a great deal of variability in these products. And I would also note that there's a lot of change in these products over time. So the electronic cigarette of 2009, when they first became popular, is very different than the electronic cigarettes that we're seeing today. And today we're even starting to see some very advanced systems where the user can actually control the voltage by themselves, and they kind of mix their own e-liquid or juice, they call it. So it almost becomes kind of like a hobby. And, it's So I think people need to realize that not every electronic cigarette is just one of the types that you typically get at a convenience store that looks like a cigarette. There are some that don't look at all like a cigarette.
So they all look completely different. Some of them look like a pen. I actually mm-hmm. brought one in. I've got one here in front of me. It looks like a fat, I don't know, marker or something, right? So for you, I think first, Dr. Siegel, but you too, Dr. Tansky, these are hugely popular. This has gone from almost, you know, zero to 100 in just a couple of years. Why is vaping or the use of e-cigarettes, Dr. Siegel, so popular? Why has this jumped so much in recent years?
Well, I think that the main reason is that, first of all, so many smokers want to quit. At least 80% of smokers really want to quit. But the current treatments that are out there are not very effective. Nicotine replacement therapy and the smoking cessation drugs that are on the market, the long-term effectiveness is only on the order of about 10%. So the majority of time when people try to quit, they're unsuccessful. And one of the reasons why people are unsuccessful is because the behavioral aspects of smoking are so addictive, holding the cigarette, feeling the oral sensation, feeling the throat hit, some of the social aspects of smoking, even the associations of smoking with other behaviors. When you just put a nicotine patch on, it doesn't simulate any of those other aspects of the addiction. It's more than just the nicotine. And so here we have a product that comes along, and it not only replaces the nicotine, but it replaces the physical and the psychological and even the social aspects of smoking. So I think the reason why it's so popular is that smokers who are trying to quit but just can't do it with the traditional therapies, many of them have found that these are really helpful. So I think that's really what's driving the market.
So gum and patches just don't do it in that social sense, Dr. Siegel, the way that vaping does.
Well, they certainly do it for some people, but I don't think for a large percentage of the population. There are just a lot of smokers out there who've tried and just haven't succeeded with the traditional therapies. And so having this alternative available gives them a possibility of trying a different way. And it allows them to continue going through the motions of smoking, if you will, but without actually smoking tobacco.
What do you think, Dr. Tansky? This is really your line of work, trying to get people to either stop using tobacco or prevent them from using it in the first place. Let's talk about cessation first, because I know you have concerns about prevention. Does vaping help people stop smoking cigarettes?
Well, there's a little bit of nuance there, too. So this is a technology that kind of came before the science. And so we're left in science trying to catch up and figure out how effective is it? Where's the safety of it? How safe is it? And so we're playing catch up, and that's a little tough spot to be in. So we know from a few studies, there's one study in particular that said that vaping and using an e-cigarette was about as effective as using a nicotine patch in real world use. And that's very cause for optimism. A whole bunch of other studies, though, have said that it helps people cut down, but people are more likely to maintain some of their smoked tobacco while they're using the electronic cigarettes as well. So it's called dual use. And if that is someone who we could have otherwise gotten to quit completely, that's a little cause for concern. It's celebrating that they've been able to cut down on their combusted tobacco or their smoked tobacco. But if they'd used other methods, could they have gotten off that completely? Are we holding on or maintaining their smoked tobacco habit? And that's a place where we're a little worried. So a lot of the studies are saying we're maintaining this dual use. And then there's a couple studies that are showing that people have been effective with the using a vape pen or an electronic cigarette. The studies are just in progress right now, though, because as you said, this is something that's fairly new. And we've really only had it for the last maybe 5 years where it's really taken off, as you mentioned.
Well, and once we get Rob Stein back up, we can ask him more about the FDA.
Absolutely.
And Rob, you're back with us.
Yes, finally.
Okay, well, thank you very much, and sorry about that. We were talking about, you know, this big question, Rob, and I know you've reported on this, whether vaping is the healthier alternative to smoking, as it's often marketed as. You've written, Rob, that there's no consensus within the medical community about that. How come?
Well, you know, basically, electronic cigarettes haven't been around long enough and haven't been studied enough to really know for sure what's going on with them. I mean, I think a lot of people think that they probably are safer than regular cigarettes. The question is, how much safer are they than regular cigarettes? And really, nobody knows because, as I said, they need to do a lot more research to really know. And also, these devices, they vary a lot from one device to another. And so there's a big question whether if you use one type of e-cigarette, whether you're getting exposed to the same sort of chemicals that you're getting exposed to if you use a different kind of e-cigarette.
Yeah, so as Dr. Tansky said, the research is way behind the technology. Sort of the vaping came first.
Oh, that's right. These things came onto the market, and they just took off. They became wildly popular, and way, you know, a lot faster than the research could keep up with them. And so, that's the big concern here. I mean, there's sort of, you know, it's sort of a double-edged sword. I think a lot of people think these things could be really helpful. They could keep a lot of people from starting to smoke, and they could help some people quit smoking, and that would be a really good thing for public health. But there's a lot of concern that it could also be sort of a gateway drug to regular cigarettes, especially for teenagers, and that would obviously not be good. And so the public health community is sort of a split on this in a lot of ways.
Let's get our listeners involved again. The number here in the exchange, 1-800-892-6477. Today in the exchange, you can join us with your questions and comments about the wild popularity of vaping going from almost nowhere to being all over the state. You can join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And all of you, first up is Alex in Concord. Hi, Alex. You're on the exchange. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you today? Thanks
Fine.
For taking the call.
Go ahead, Alex.
Hi, how are you? Are you there?
I am, yeah, go ahead.
Great, thank you for taking my call. I wanted to call in today. I'm the president of the New Hampshire Vapors Association, and I was contacted by the show, and I just really appreciate you guys, you know, having the show, having guests on to sort of discuss the issues and inviting us to call in.
Did you have a concern or a question, Alex, about some of the issues that we're talking about with vaping?
Yes.
For example, the FDA is looking at possibly extending its tobacco regulatory authority over vaping.
Right, absolutely. And that could go either way. But I think we're really focused on, you know, as an industry, as a community of vaping citizens, we quit because out of a passion for, you know, for the effects it's had in our own personal life. And many of us are shop owners. I myself own two vape shops in the state, and/or e-liquid manufacturers. And as a community, most of us were so passionate about this that we found it through, you know, as the only effective method. In my case, and I think a lot of the customers that I've worked with, they tell you that they've quit through other smoking cessation methods multiple times, and they've successfully quit multiple times. Which in itself suggests that pharmaceutical method or the cold turkey method is really unsuccessful because it should be a quit and done. But the problem is the relapse. And I think one of your guests, he suggested that it's because of the social addiction, the behavioral, the ritual aspect of smoking, that it's so the addiction is so much stronger than the chemical addiction. And that's where vaping, we really feel that it's the most effective method because it allows smokers to continue their
social element that Dr. Siegel talked about earlier. Yeah, and we'll talk about that and the chemicals after a short break. Stay with us. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, what we know about vaping and e-cigarettes and what we don't know. We invite you to join us at 1-800-892-6477. We welcome your questions, comments, personal experiences with e-cigarettes. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. We have three guests for the hour. Dr. Michael Siegel, Professor of Community Health Services at the Boston University School of Public Health. Rob Stein joins us from NPR, where he's a senior editor on the science desk. And Dr. Suzanne Tansky, Associate Professor of Pediatrics at Dartmouth's Geisel School of Medicine, focusing on tobacco prevention and cessation. One more time, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. All of you, a couple questions stemming from that call that just came in, from the New Hampshire Vaping Association. And to you first, Dr. Siegel, he mentioned the chemicals. He also said vaping definitely helped him quit and many others. But what chemicals are you taking into your body when you're vaping, Dr. Siegel?
Well, the actual liquids basically contain nicotine, and then they contain usually either propylene glycol or glycerin. The problem with vaping is that when the vapor is heated up, the propylene glycol and glycerin can actually break down. There are some chemicals that can be formed. And I think that the most potentially significant of those are aldehydes like formaldehyde and acetaldehyde. So, and these are formaldehyde is a carcinogen. So, the question really, there are really two questions, I think, in terms of the long-term health effects. One is whether inhaling propylene glycol for a long, long time could have respiratory effects. And the second is whether or not the formaldehyde may pose a carcinogenic risk if used long-term. And it's for this reason that I think the FDA needs to step in and regulate the levels of these chemicals to make sure that they're kept at as low level as possible. And we have the technology to do that. There are some brands on the market that don't have those levels. But as Dr. Tansky said, there's hundreds and hundreds of brands. And we really need regulations to make sure that every company keeps those chemicals down. The consumer should not have to be worrying about what brand they have, whether there's formaldehyde in it. We should really have all the brands which are producing the lowest levels of chemicals possible. And the technology is there to pretty much remove the formaldehyde.
So, Dr. Siegel, you say that as somebody who supports e-cigarettes as a way to help people get off regular tobacco. You still do want to see some FDA regulation there.
Well, I think that the you know, what I see is the promise of the of this, if this new technology, it has tremendous promise, but it's not there yet. And I think that it has the potential to really change the entire marketplace and to create a huge shift from combustible tobacco products, which are inherently dangerous, to much cleaner forms of nicotine delivery that are not safe, but much less dangerous. But I think that what we need to do is we need to try to maximize the benefits, but at the same time, minimize the risks. And I think regulation is necessary to do that in any industry, because it's only as good, you know, an industry is only good as good as its weakest players. Now, we need to make sure that all of the companies are upholding basic quality control and safety standards. And the only way to ensure that is to have regulations.
Well, and here's an email about the nicotine. This is from Martin in Concord, and I'll throw this to you, Dr. Tansky. Martin says, please address the potential benefits of nicotine, especially for older people, memory and cognition, delayed Parkinson's, appetite suppression, among others. Martin says, if nicotine is beneficial and can be taken without the harm of tobacco, might it be a good habit for older folks? Thank you, Martin, for the email. A couple things from that. First of all, Dr. Tansky, is nicotine beneficial? I thought it was harmful.
There's a little nuance here as well. I'm going to go back to my nuance word. So nicotine is a toxin. So it's a drug that we know quite a lot about. The very first uses for nicotine were actually as pest control, or one of the first uses. And it's in tobacco, and it is highly addictive. It's a substance that, among adolescents in particular, the adolescent brain, a young brain, is uniquely susceptible to becoming addicted to it. Addiction means you become habituated to it, you get used to it, and you need higher doses to feel well. So nicotine has some significant risks. In high doses, for someone who's nicotine naive, it can actually cause death. And we unfortunately had our first death in the United States from a child who got into a nicotine refill solution, and that little boy died in New York State just in last December, which was horrible. And we've had a lot more calls to poison control. So we know that nicotine has harms. For the person who is already used to nicotine, though, that makes them feel better, and their body is more used to it, and a dose of it actually makes them feel healthy and well. And
makes them feel better, but is it beneficial, to use Martin's term?
There's a lot of debate about that, and whether that we know that it increases alertness and it does stimulate memory. But is the risk of nicotine, is that how you have to weigh your risks and benefits, and is the harm and the concern of addiction outweigh the potential memory benefits from it? And I think that research is ongoing as to how much benefit you get. And there's a lot of research ongoing with that, with Parkinson's and memory and older adults. I think, I don't know the details of that quite as well, because I am a pediatrician and I focus on the kids. And I'd love to talk a little bit about that, going back to nicotine and the adolescent brain, because that's something I'm really worried about. And our previous caller mentioned that people have to quit multiple times. And part of that is because of the addictiveness of nicotine. And it's a very hard thing to get over, a very hard habit to break, if you will. And so people repeatedly quitting and repeatedly quitting successfully, as our caller was mentioning, that is a pretty worrisome thing, that it does take so much to get over it. And that's particularly worrisome for me when we've got young people who are really interested in trying these products. And what we know is that 3.5% in 2013 of high school students were using these products, and it's now up to 13.5% in 2014.
Wow, that's a big jump.
Huge jump. So that's 2.5 million kids that are currently using, high school kids who are currently using. And that's 2014. What happens in 2015? Is it going to triple again? Is it 6 million high school students now that are using these products every month and using them regularly? We don't know. And the trajectory is very concerning for me.
Would they be smoking regular cigarettes otherwise, or are they new and completely new to this whole idea of smoking?
And that's a big area of wonder. We're not really sure. But there were two studies, one that came out just today and one that came out a couple weeks ago, that showed that kids who had never smoked before but used electronic cigarettes going forward, following them forward 6 or 12 months, those kids who used e-cigarettes were more likely to go on and use cigarettes and other tobacco products. So it seems like that's a trajectory. It's an association. We can't say it's causing them to go on to smoke tobacco, but it's very concerning. And these are the first two longitudinal, looking forward studies that show that this is a path that people might be taking.
Okay, and let's take a call from Lori. Again, the number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And Lori, go ahead. You're in the exchange. Welcome.
My question is directly related to what the doctor just said. We have a whole generation of young adults that are trying these e-cigarettes for the first time at a time when use of traditional cigarettes among that same population has been dropping. I think it's very telling that your first caller was from the vaping sort of industry. All three of the major cigarette companies have invested very heavily in this because as they see one market drop, they see another opportunity open. And there's evidence that introducing an addictive chemical into an adolescent brain increases the development of addictive behaviors later in life. So I think we're playing with fire in the sense that we have a whole generation of kids who are trying these products for the cultural and social aspect of it and will keep as a residual downside, a nicotine addiction.
Lori, thank you for the call. And Rob Stein, so this is another huge issue. The suspicion.
I can hear the host. And I
Rob, you there?
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, can you hear me? It's Laura.
Hey,
you still
Laura.
Here? So this is part of a problem that our caller Lori brings up, that there's a suspicion that, you know, people who say this is so great and it helps everybody quit, that this comes at a time when regular cigarette smoking is down. Our caller Lori says this is just the tobacco companies finding a new niche when their traditional products are growing less popular. I wonder what you've seen or heard about that in your reporting.
Yeah, that's one of the big concerns about this. It's, you know, we've been making sort of slow but steady progress in reducing use of regular tobacco cigarettes. And the concern is that, well, this could go either way. This could either help with that trend and keep pushing it down, or it could go the other way. And the big concern is that it could hook like a whole new generation on nicotine who will then go on to progress to start smoking regular cigarettes. And again, that's one of the big questions about e-cigarettes. It could help some people quit or not smoke, or it could end up in the long run increasing cigarette smoking if these kids end up progressing from electronic cigarettes to tobacco cigarettes.
Well, Dr. Siegel, I want to bring you on this too, but Rob, this is something the FDA is proposing that it look at, right? The idea of marketing to minors.
Oh, yes. I mean, the FDA...
Joe Camel, right? All that all over again.
Yeah, the FDA is planning to regulate e-cigarettes, and it's planning to do a number of things, including banning the sales of e-cigarettes to minors and banning the sale of e-cigarettes in vending machines, and doing some other things to try to keep kids from starting to try them, like banning the free giveaways of electronic cigarettes. And they're also, two of the big things that the FDA is planning to do is require the e-cigarette makers to disclose the ingredients in these devices so that the FDA and users, for the first time, will know exactly what's in them, and also to submit their devices to the FDA for review so the FDA can really take a look at them and figure out, and make sure, see how they work and see if there's consistency across the board through different manufacturers.
I want to bring you into this too, Dr. Siegel. Lori, our caller, and thank you, Lori, suspicious of the rosy feel-good motives of the companies that are promoting this, that they're really just looking for another market. What do you think, Dr. Siegel?
Well, there's no question that the original companies that produced these products were genuine, and that they were, you know, the purpose of the product was to really get smokers off of cigarettes. And the those companies, the independent companies, you know, there's no question that their economic incentive is to have people smoking as to switch as much as possible. So what they really wanted was for everyone to quit and use their products instead. It's been complicated because in 2012, the tobacco companies, all three of the major companies, got into the business of electronic cigarettes, and people are skeptical of their of what their motives are. But I think that the, you know, Lori's point is a very important one, because the main risk that we're concerned about is what if non-smokers who have, you know, never smoked before and really would not be interested in smoking try electronic cigarettes, get addicted to the nicotine, and then progress to become smokers, real smokers. And that, you know, that is definitely the greatest risk. Fortunately, the evidence right now suggests that that's not happening. Even though the rates of electronic cigarette experimentation have been skyrocketing, the rates of smoking among youth are actually at a historic low. So smoking is going in the opposite direction. As more and more kids are trying electronic cigarettes, fewer and fewer kids are smoking. And, you know, so the question is, why would that be? And I think the reason for it is that these electronic cigarettes are flavored products. They come in, you know, cherry, strawberry, banana, you name it.
Oreo cookie, bubblegum.
Exactly. And I think that once a kid starts using those flavored products, you know, to then pick up a Marlboro and to really enjoy it and to continue with it it just doesn't seem very likely. It's very hard for kids to start smoking to begin with, and that's why the companies put menthol in there, because it anesthetizes the respiratory tract. It makes it even harder for them to smoke if they've gotten used to, or if they're aware that there are these flavored products. So although it's definitely a concern and we need to watch carefully, the evidence right now suggests that, if anything, e-cigarettes are leading kids away from the real thing. It's an alternative, and while it's not good that kids are trying vaping, it certainly doesn't look like this is leading them to smoking.
Do we know that, Dr. Siegel, that we're quote-unquote leading them away from the real thing, or that they are just jumping into this with no interest in the real thing?
Well, we don't know that yet.
That's the fundamental question, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, it is, and I think what the studies have shown is that the kids who are trying these products are kids who are likely to be susceptible to smoking. They're kids who clearly are more sensation-seeking, more risk-taking, and it's possible that these are kids who are likely or more likely to start smoking. And so the question is, if these kids try vaping instead of smoking, then, you know, that's a good thing. Now, obviously, I'm not suggesting that we promote these products. I mean, I think we need to do everything we can to keep them out of the hands of kids. But I think the most important thing that we can do to that end is to change the way the products are marketed. Right now, the products are marketed as this, you know, new, sexy behavior. You see models using them, and it makes it look very glamorous. And I think that that does attract young people. And what we really need to see is truthful marketing, which is basically marketing that says, hey, look, this is a product to try to get you off those nasty cigarettes. And the problem is companies can't do that right now, because if they make any claims that this is intended for smoking cessation, the FDA can regulate them and basically take them off the market until they file applications. And obviously companies don't want to do that. So
okay, so this gets into the FDA and the regulations.
Exactly.
And how they're marketed and so forth. I definitely want to get into that with all of you, but let's go to another listener, and this is Donna in Nashua. Hi, Donna. Go ahead. You're in the Exchange.
Oh, hi, Laura. Thanks so much for taking the call.
Sure.
I know this is a little bit off topic, but I wanted to just share that a mental health professional that I work with at a nonprofit has told me that the latest thing kids are doing now with vaping is they are vaping marijuana. And the way they do that is they get the THC oil and they just put it into the cartridge, and no one is the wiser because there's no telltale smell at all.
You know, I had read about this recently. Donna, do you know anything about that, Dr. Tansky?
I know a little bit about that, not nearly as much as some of my colleagues say in Colorado, but yes, that is something that is fairly well known. And in fact, some of the products themselves, some of the vape pens themselves are marketed for dry herb and for oils like hash oils. And some do the little wink wink when they're talking about what they're used for. And so that is absolutely something that people are using these pens for. And it is very stealthy. They don't have the same kind of odor as if someone is actually smoking marijuana or using it in more traditional manners. So it's very stealthy. So you have no idea if your kid or your neighbor might be using marijuana while they're using their vape pen.
Well, Donna, thank you for the call. And here's an email, similar comment from Amy, who says, I read an article this week that people are starting to incorporate marijuana and other more serious synthetic drugs to their mixes for use in e-cigarettes. Amy says, what do the panelists think of this? Is this something that the FDA would try to address? Rob, do you know, is the FDA even looking at that angle of it?
No, not right now. Right now, their focus is on the use of this for nicotine, but that is something that down the road I suppose they could take a look at, and there is definitely evidence that that's the case. It's a study that just came out this week, taking a look at high school kids and what percentage of them that use e-cigarettes also use it to smoke marijuana products, and then found that a significant number of them do.
And as we talked earlier, Rob, about marketing and the claims that companies can make, and Dr. Siegel's, you know, right, he said they can't make certain specific smoking cessation claims because of FDA rules and regs. But the marketing, Rob, does almost go there, doesn't it? I mean, the healthier alternative. You see that a lot.
Oh, yeah, there's no question about it that their suggestion in a lot of the marketing is that this is a safer alternative to cigarettes. And, you know, that is one of the big criticisms of what the FDA has proposed, that they're not going, so a lot of the critics say that the FDA is not going, or wasn't planning anyway, to go far enough in regulating how these devices are being marketed. For example, I think one of the other guests mentioned how they come in all these different flavors, and a lot of people would like to see the FDA ban the flavorings in these devices so they wouldn't be as appealing to kids. And they would like also the FDA to ban some of the television advertising. These devices are being marketed very aggressively on television, and especially in ways that appeal to young people. So
okay.
That's one of the things that people would like to see done. And the FDA said they might do that down the road.
And Dr. Tansky, I know you have thoughts on that. We will go back to that in just a moment. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're talking about the trend toward e-cigarettes and vaping and some of the public health concerns around it in light of coming FDA regulations. Join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. We're taking your questions, comments, personal experiences with this issue. And I've got a lot of emails I want to share with all of you. But Dr. Tansky, back to you on the idea of marketing and how this is an area where the FDA is probably going to be looking.
Well, actually, as far as I understand it, the marketing is not part of their deeming regulation. And the marketing of e-cigarettes is actually really an interesting thing. The advertising is now on television. We haven't had television advertising for cigarettes and tobacco products since the 70s, before the 70s. So there's this halo effect. If you can see something advertised on the Super Bowl or the big game, then perhaps that this is really an okay product. And the way they're marketing it, there's a tremendous amount of appeal. It's sexy. It's the rebellious thing. They give you these ideas of freedom. And that kind of marketing really ups the appeal, especially for adolescents. And even though they're not saying that they're directly marketing to this group, there is a lot of appeal for this group. And so I think that's also where we're getting a lot of young people who are latching onto this and trying it. And there's a big culture around this. If you go on YouTube, you see all sorts of things that people are doing, cloud chasing, big amounts of vapor. So there's
cloud chasing. What is that?
Oh, it's the biggest plume you can make. And so they tune their devices so they make these giant plumes of vapor. And there's little tricks you can do. You can make Cheerios and smoke rings and all these tricks.
Oh, just like in the movies from the 1940s.
Right, right. But now it's with vapor. And so there's all these things that are drawing young people in. And some of it is advertised directly to youth or to young people. And so that's a real area of concern, is that there is all of this marketing around vaping products.
Well, and speaking of the big cloud, here's an email from Lorna who asks, is there any secondhand smoke dangers? What about that, Dr. Siegel? If somebody's making a giant cloud and there are a couple toddlers standing nearby, what happens?
Well, what we this is a question that that really needs more research. But the research that's been done so far suggests that there is very low risk because the studies that have been done looking at the level of chemicals in the exhale vapor from the users of the product basically show very low levels of chemicals that are really not much higher than what you inhale, say, when you are breathing in just regular outdoor air, urban air especially. So far there doesn't appear to be evidence that there's tremendous risk from breathing in the vapor as a bystander, fortunately.
So the nicotine is ingested by the person, Dr. Siegel, but others outside next to him or her aren't affected by that.
Well, the levels of nicotine in the ambient air are going to be very low. So it's not that nicotine is not going to be a problem. The other thing is that, you know, there's no question that secondhand smoke is much more harmful. So, I mean, one of the benefits of electronic cigarettes is that, you know, if smokers are able to switch to them, it's going to limit the amount of secondhand smoke that people are exposed to.
Here's an email that came in from Sarah in Pembroke, who says part of the issue with the proposed regulations is that the companies that are doing it right, disclosing ingredients, putting warning labels on their bottle, using organic flavors, refusing to sell to minors, are the independents, and the high costs associated with the FDA application would put many of these companies out of business, leaving the big tobacco companies with their poor quality products and shady marketing the only ones on the market. Sarah, thank you for the email. This is a huge issue, and Rob, I'll turn to you first, the concern that the little guys will be put out of business by coming FDA regulations.
Yeah, there's no question about that. That is one of the big concerns in the industry is that it once the FDA gets involved and requires certain things to be done by the companies, that can be a very long and costly process to go through to submit all the ingredients in their products and to submit their devices for the FDA to review. And there's a lot of concern, you know, that right now there are thousands of different manufacturers and I think of many, maybe 10,000 vape shops around the country. And the smaller companies are worried that the FDA regulation could be too onerous for them. It could end up putting them out of business. And you're already seeing some consolidation in the industry. You're seeing the big tobacco companies, which were not players in this, have become big players in this.
Thousands of vape shops around the country springing up from, you know, almost nothing 10 years ago, right, Rob? I mean, this is still really a Wild West or a Brave New World or whatever you want to call it.
Oh, yeah. No, you know, 10 years ago, this the vaping industry was basically non-existent or very small, and it just gone crazy. I mean, last year, I think it was more than a $2 billion industry. There are projections that in 2015, it will be more than a $3 billion industry. It's really taken off.
Is the emailer right, Rob, and others can jump in on this too, that the big tobacco companies, I'm reading from her last line here, have poor quality products and shady marketing? I mean, are there sort of white hats and black hats in this, Rob?
Well, that, you know, it depends who you talk to for that one, that's for sure. And again, that's one. There's so many things about e-cigarettes we don't know because we just nobody's really taken a careful look at these devices to evaluate them and tell which ones how they work and how they're different and how they're similar. And that's one of the big things that the FDA wants to do is they wants to get the authority to require all the companies to submit their devices so somebody for the first time can really know what these things are and how they work and what's in them.
And why don't we know, Rob? I mean, it sounds like the FDA is just starting to dive into this. Why doesn't the FDA know right now? Is it just because it's so new, or?
Yeah, it's so new, and they haven't had the opportunity to really evaluate them. And that's what they're trying to do with these regulations. Now, the question is, why is it taking so long? The FDA proposed these regulations back in May of 2014, and people have been waiting for them to finally come out with their final regulations. Because even once they do that, it's going to be years before all the regulations go into effect. And in the meantime, you know, this industry is going to just continue to grow, and more people are going to be using these devices. So people are really anxious for the FDA to finally do something.
Well, and I'm guessing you're on the anxious end, Dr. Tansky.
Yes, absolutely. It's the consumers need to know what is in these products. They need to know where the margins of safety are, where are the risks. Dr. Siegel mentioned that there is not a lot of evidence about the secondhand vapor, although there are a couple of studies that suggest that beyond the chemicals themselves, there's some ultrafine particles, so tiny things that can make you cough and maybe trigger an asthma attack, that are actually very similar in vape clouds as they are in cigarette puffs of smoke. So it's different, but there's some concern that there is harm there. And particularly with young developing lungs, you mentioned toddlers or babies, there's a couple studies that show that exposing very young lungs in animal models to vape actually can impair how they work and how they grow. So early studies, again, the FDA and everyone else is kind of behind the eight ball on this, trying to catch up and figure out where the risks are. But as the additional evidence comes, these are not without risk. They're certainly better than secondhand smoke, but they're not without risk. And if I use my comparison of healthy air, I'll stick with healthy air.
Dr. Siegel, to you and back to Sarah's email. And Sarah, thank you very much. The idea that the little guys are doing it right with the organic ingredients and the disclosure and so forth, whereas the big guys are doing this kind of shadily, as Sarah puts it. What do you think, Dr. Siegel?
Well, it's not that simple. There are hundreds and hundreds of companies out there and different brands and products. And, you know, it's actually the tobacco, you know, ironically, it's the tobacco companies that actually have the best manufacturing standards because they're best equipped to, although they produce a deadly product, they have a lot of money, and they can actually produce the products. So the tobacco company products are actually manufactured to pretty high quality standards. The real concern is some of these independent companies and even some of these small vape shops where, you know, they're mixing the liquids in the back room and you really don't know exactly what they're doing back there and what they're putting in it. So I agree that there are some companies that are keeping to very high standards and that there are some bad players on the market. It's not as simple as breaking it down by tobacco versus not to big tobacco versus independent companies. But I think the point is that the FDA needs to set uniform standards that all of these companies have to follow. I mean, there should not be batteries exploding. There should not be all the liquid should be childproof. We shouldn't have infants being poisoned by this. These are just basic manufacturing standards that, you know, are common to every industry, and there's no reason why the electronic cigarette industry shouldn't be subject to these standards. So
basic
I'm
consumer product.
The FDA will do that.
Basic consumer product safety that we would expect from any product, Dr. Siegel.
Exactly.
You know, Rob, just to wrap up, again, we've talked a lot about the FDA, what it might do, what it might not do. Just outline for us again, if you could, please, Rob, what we might expect from the FDA this fall when it finally does come out with these regulations.
Sure. I mean, what the FDA proposed to do when it initially announced its plans to regulate e-cigarettes were to do a number of things: ban the sales of electronic cigarettes to minors, ban the sale of electronic cigarettes in vending machines, ban these free giveaways of electronic cigarettes, require warning labels on electronic cigarettes that they contain nicotine, which is addictive, require the manufacturers to disclose the ingredients, and also to submit their devices to the FDA for review. Now, the question is, will they go forward with all of those things, and will they do more than that? And those are the big questions. We just don't know, and that's what people are waiting to hear.
Okay, so some restrictions on sales, and some states, right, Rob, already banned sales to minors and in vending machines, and yet you do still see teenagers doing this. But some restrictions on sales, and then it sounds like some disclosure requirements. What more, Rob, did public health experts want the FDA to do that it's not doing with this?
Oh, there are lots of things that lots of folks would like to see the FDA do that they initially at least said that they weren't planning to do, which are things like, as I mentioned earlier, banning these flavorings in the liquid, these candy flavorings and Oreo cookie flavorings that appeal to kids. They'd like to see the FDA crack down on the marketing and the advertising of these devices, which, you know, people say is going a long way towards driving the popularity of these things. And the FDA had said that they, you know, those are things that they might consider doing down the road, but they wanted to take these steps first to sort of lay the groundwork to figure out exactly what to do next.
And how long a road is that, Rob? One of our guests alluded to it earlier, but how long a road is this?
Yeah, it's going to be a while. Even once the FDA finalizes its regulations, they're not going to roll them all out immediately. They're going to roll them out in phases. So it'll literally take years before all the regulations will fully go into effect. But as you said, there are lots of regulations that are already happening on a state and local level.
One more question for you on the regulations, and I want to get our other guests in too, Rob. From what I understand, the British have been working with this vaping industry for a while and seem to have found some sort of comfortable zone. Do you know anything about that, Rob?
Well, yeah. Just recently, the National Health Service in Britain released a kind of comprehensive review of electronic cigarettes, in which they concluded that they are, according to their analysis, significantly safer than regular cigarettes. I think they said they were like 95% safer than regular cigarettes. And so, but I think that's sort of, you know, I think there's a fair consensus among the public health community that these things are safer. The question is, you know, they're not entirely safe. They're not 100% safe. And how safe are they really?
How much safer? Yeah. So getting to what Rob said, Dr. Tansky, about the FDA and some of these proposals, would you have liked to see the FDA go further in terms of the marketing, the advertising, the Oreo cookie flavors?
Absolutely. I think it would have been great to for them to extend their deeming what they intended to do. However, I do understand that there's only so far they can go without opposition, and they really wanted to get these things through, hoping these elements wouldn't be as opposed and then take the next step. In my perfect world, we would have no advertising on television. We wouldn't have we'd have the same kind of restrictions for advertising for electronic cigarettes as we do for other tobacco products. I understand that that's down the road, as Rob was just saying, and I hope we see that, because I am particularly worried about the advertising and the flavors. So another aspect of the flavors that we didn't even touch on is, are these flavorings even safe at all? Maybe they're safe to eat. Maybe they're safe to have in your personal hygiene products. But there's we don't know at all if these are safe to breathe into your lungs when heated. So what are the excess risks of Oreo flavoring compared to cherry, compared to Bubblicious or whatever the other flavors are? And there's a lot of worry for me about those flavors attracting children, attracting young people, and then the inherent safety of those flavors by themselves for our adult consumers who may decide that that's something that they're interested in.
And Dr. Siegel, to you, given, you know, your feeling that these are a good way to help people not start smoking or get rid of their smoking habit, what restrictions feel appropriate to you from the FDA, and what feels like going too far?
Well, you know, the first part of it is pretty easy. I mean, I think that the FDA should ban the sale of the products to minors, and I think that it should, you know, certainly require the ingredients and the components of the vapor to be disclosed. I think that the marketing needs to be regulated. As I said, there's no reason these products should be marketed with these, you know, sexy messages. I think they should be marketed based on what the product is really for, which is to try to get people off smoking. The commercials should really be anti-smoking commercials, essentially. And the most important thing that I think I'd like to see in the regulations is the manufacturing standards for all the companies, basic quality control standards. As far as what looks like it's going to be in the regulations, but what's problematic is, first, as Rob mentioned, the way the deeming regulations were formed, they have very onerous burden on every company. Every company would have to put an application to have its product approved, and those applications would take a huge amount of time and money and probably would put the smaller players out of business, and really it's the tobacco companies that are best positioned to comply with these onerous regulations. And do we really want to restrict the market or basically hand the market to the tobacco companies? I think we don't want to do that. The reason why the market is so strong is because there are so many different companies out there that consumers can choose from. But I think the worst thing that the regulations are going to do, if they look like the deeming regulations, is they're not going to allow companies to tell their consumers that these products are safer than cigarettes, and they're not even going to allow companies to say that there's no tobacco in the product. If the FDA deeming regulations as they were proposed, if they look the same when they actually come out, these are two really serious problems, because if companies can't market the product based on, you know, being a safer alternative to smoking and getting you off of smoking, the only way they can do it is by, using these sexy messages, and I think that's problematic.
All right. Well, we will see what happens when the FDA comes out with these rules. We'll be following your blog, Rob Stein, to know what's going on. Rob, thank you very much for being with us today. We appreciate it.
Oh, sure. Nice to be here.
Rob Stein, correspondent, senior editor at NPR's Science Desk. And Dr. Michael Siegel, thank you also for your time.
Well, thanks for having me.
Dr. Michael Siegel, professor of Community Health Sciences at the Boston University School of Public Health. And Dr. Suzanne Tansky, thank you also.
Thank you.
Dr. Suzanne Tansky, associate professor of pediatrics at Dartmouth's Geisel School of Medicine. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer today is David Darman. The senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producer is Faith Meixel. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord, and I'm Laura Kanoy.